This week on the Recruitment Flex, Canada's and USA job numbers tell a different story. Most of the employees who recently switched jobs did it because a recruiter reached out to them. Not wearing makeup at an interview, a reason not to get a job? Plus, your next new hire already works for you. Tear Up with My Dad and Shelly starts right now.
Welcome to the Recruitment Flex with Serge and Shelly. I'm Serge.
And I'm Shelly. And we talk all things recruitment starting right now.
Bonjour and welcome to the Recruitment Flex. Shelly, are your eyes hurting? Did you stare directly at the eclipse?
No, I have to admit, I did not. I did catch some great photos, though. A friend of mine is an amateur photographer, and she posted them pretty shortly after. Unfortunately, I think in Calgary, it was pretty cloudy, but it was funny because there was a whole setup at the U of C with their observatory team. And they had this place where you could come stand in line, get the glasses. And it became the joke of anybody standing in line, don't look at the sun. Why not? It's cloudy out. I'm going to look at the sun. It's cloudy out. What do I need glasses for? I'm just going to stare directly at the sun for the next 3.5 minutes. No, don't.
I got to admit, it wasn't even on my radar, but I wasn't really concerned or even thought about it because in Calgary here, it was very partial from what I could understand. But it's funny because I was talking to some folks in New Brunswick, which they were directly in the path, right, of seeing the full eclipse and got some great photos. But I got to be honest, usually I care a lot about this type of stuff because it's once in a lifetime or whatever. I really didn't even bother with this eclipse.
I think if your girls had been a bit older.
Yes.
Like even preteen, 11, 12, 13. And also at school, they make a big deal of it. But speaking of university, yesterday was Bermuda Shorts Day.
Okay.
At the University of Calgary. And so regardless of the weather, you are supposed to wear like a Hawaiian kind of floral pattern shirt and shorts. Regardless of what it's like, I went to pick up Brooke in the evening and they start drinking at about 10 in the morning. So you add drinking in the morning, then the eclipse. And I went to pick them up, Brooke and her friend, and there were a lot of drunken, fallen down people on the streets. It's, oh my goodness.
That's the value of university, right? Getting drunk on the streets and wearing Bermuda shorts. That's funny. Yeah. Shelly, let's jump quickly in the news. There's a couple things that I want to point out here. So our friends at Fama today, we're recording on a Wednesday, they released a beta of a new product called InstaFit. And there's a campaign going on right now where they're using the hashtag magic of fit. And there's a question that they asked, and I wanted to ask you that question. Can you tell me about a time that you hired someone and you're like, boom, they're an instant fit. They're going to work out. Like, they're the perfect employee for what I need. Do you have an example of that?
Do I ever? Oh my God. And I knew it within one day. I did. I knew it within one day. And I've always said, you can tell someone's character by their first day of work and their last day of work. So I hired someone earlier this year in August. Sorry, last year, August of 23. And I knew within the first hour that my life was about to get a whole lot better. So I hired, as most people already know, it's Leah Sobrin. And I've known Leah, but I was her customer, right?
Yeah.
I really didn't know what to expect, but she joined and I felt like as a business owner, my game just went up.
I've hired Leah Sobrin or work with her in five different companies, so I can attest. And I knew you guys were going to be an instant fit.
I know because you've worked with her and you and I obviously have worked together now for a long time. But how did you know? Like, how did you know she was an instant fit for me or that she would be?
Well, I know your strengths and I know your weaknesses and I know Leah's strengths and I know her weaknesses. And it's almost like it's directly correlated. I knew it would be a perfect fit. And she is so easy to work with that I had no doubts that it would step up your game and you'd love working with her and vice versa. you're a fantastic leader. And I know Leah likes to work with someone with like clear direction, knows exactly where she wants to go. So I knew it was an instant fit. Mm-hmm. So there you go, Fama. We have an instant fit. Tell you a little bit what instant fit. So Fama offers a range of products to identify misconduct across more than 10,000 publicly available online sources, including Meta Properties, Twitter, and TikTok. Now, the same web presence can tell employers instantly if a candidate is a strategic thinker, has business acumen, financial acumen, or even traits like confidence. Fama Instant Fit runs advanced text analysis models trained on a proprietary screening framework to measure a candidate's unique professional traits based on the web presence alone. In seconds, you will have data to add to your screening process to better understand how a candidate will interact with coworkers and customers. Very interesting. Remember when we met Ben at HR Tech? He kind of had a demo at this and we were supposed to go take a look at it. And I think we ran out of time. Mm-hmm. This is what it is. I don't know how well it works. I don't know how great it is. It sounds fantastic, but we're going to have to bring Ben on the show to go in depth what this actually means. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on this?
The concept is great because it leaves you with something positive, right? In other words, here's the positive side of what we're seeing in your profile. You've got a career in talent acquisition, right? So you may have a bit of an advantage, but there was something you said, and that was you understood my strengths and weaknesses, and you understand Leah's strengths and weaknesses, and that's what made the fit. So on the Insta fit, you can't just do one part of the equation. Mm-hmm. Like you still have to have something that says, okay, what is going to be a nice complement to the existing team or the existing department or entire corporation, right? So I'd love to see a demo of it just to understand how they do it. Yeah. Because candidates, one thing, it's a whole nother thing to have an assessment done of your existing team to know.
I love to go through your social media profiles and do an analysis and see what your strengths and weaknesses are because you don't post that much.
I know.
So I don't know how much data there is. Mine would be very interesting because I post more on LinkedIn, but I rarely post on any other channel, so I don't know what it would bring up. So congrats, Fama. All the best. Hopefully this really kicks off. In other news, a good friend of the show, Angela Hood, who is the CEO of This Way Global, big news. So she was named to Inc. I don't know if anyone reads Inc. I read it cover to cover every month. It's one of my favorite magazines. She was named Inc.'s 250 top female founders. She ended up being 106. Do you know who was 105, Shelley? Take a wild guess.
I have no idea. 100. These are female founders.
Female founders.
Right. And is this the top 250 in the US?
In the world.
Or worldwide?
Yeah, worldwide.
Worldwide. God, I have no idea.
105 was Paris Hilton.
What did she found again? Did she find something?
Something, right? She had to.
She's a founder. Okay. Okay.
Obviously, she's got still a massive brand, similar to like Kim Kardashian. Is Kim Kardashian really an entrepreneur? She is now, right? I'm assuming it's pretty similar for Paris Hilton. I would put Angela in a completely different category of someone that's built something from scratch that is extremely impressive. So congrats, Angela. We got to bring you on the show very soon to talk about this. I think that will happen. What else was in the news, Shelley?
So Canada's unemployment rate jumped to 6.1% as job creation has stalled. So Stats Canada reported a loss of 2,200 jobs in March, contributing to the increase in unemployment. But it was also fueled by more people actively seeking work or being temporarily laid off that had not previously been in the workforce. Pardon me if I'm reading between the lines. Does that mean early career?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
If you look at the data more in depth, it does look like the young folks are bearing the brunt of the labor market downturn. Since April 2023, half of the increase in the unemployment rate came from job seekers who were previously not in the labor force because they were in school. I think this is definitely a trend that we're seeing. If you're on TikTok or if you're looking at news in general, there's a lot of stories of new Canadians that came out of school or just Canadians that came out of school and are looking for jobs and are having a really hard time. There's tons of competition for those entry-level jobs. And I think employers in this market are being very picky and choosy, and people with a little bit more experience, not the fresh new talent out of school, which is a shame because, like, how do you get experience if you're not given the opportunity, right?
I know. They must feel like the world doesn't care about them.
You know what I feel about that. Yes.
Sorry. It was too tempting, Serge. It was just too tempting.
Well,
what else is going on in the news?
It's funny because I got a text from Chad Sowash after the last episode calling me a boomer because I was making fun of the people as in the people don't care about me. Yeah. So maybe I am a little bit of a boomer, but definitely a negative trend. Mm-hmm. It's the first time really that we've seen a job loss. A lot of job creation in the last year has been the private sector, not the public sector, which is extremely concerning because it's like flat. Like private sector is not growing compared to the public sector where most of the jobs are coming from, which is exactly the case in the US. So jumping to the US, they reported their job numbers as well. And they added 303,000 jobs in March, which was a surprise. But it seems every month as they release these numbers, all the economists are surprised of how good it is. Their unemployment rate edged down to 3.8%, which was at 3.9%. So compared to our 6.1%, it's a significant difference, even though we count the unemployment numbers a little bit differently from what I can understand. So if we're looking at Canada and the US, there's a lot of signals that the US economy is in a really good position overall. And there's a lot of signals that the Canadian economy is in deep trouble. I guess we'll have to wait to see what happens the next couple of months. But telling you, Shelley, I definitely feel it on the ground. The labor market in Canada is extremely tight, and it's definitely an employer market, which is not a bad thing, but it is the reality of the situation right now, and we have to adjust to it. So in the US, this is the fifth month that they've created over 200,000 new jobs. Just impressive growth. But again, a lot of it seems to be in the public sector.
In the US.
In the US, yes. Correct. In Canada as well, but US is definitely reigning. Mm-hmm. And this brought me to a story that Hung Lee shared or commented something on Twitter that I thought was really interesting because it was Canadian. And basically what it stated is, like, in China, there's 104 males for every 100 females. In Canada, between the age bracket of 25 to 44, which is probably the most important age bracket when it comes to the economy, our difference is there's 109 males to every 100 females. If we look at the past 5 years, there's been a massive increase because we saw an increase with men of 4.8 increase compared to a 3.9 increase for women, resulting in 141,000 more men than women in this bracket. I don't know what this means, right? It hit me because we've been talking about the gender gap in China for a long time. And seeing those numbers in Canada was a little bit shocking. I don't know how much of an impact it will have to the labor markets in the future, but there's got to be a societal challenge that comes with it, right? When you have a lot more males than females, meaning there's a percentage of males that will never find a partner. And that can't be good, right? Or maybe, I don't know. I have no clue, but I don't see it as a positive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think when we look to China and the unintended consequences of the one child law, like, the reason in China is very different than Canada. Yeah. You know what? The first thing that hit me, Serge, and I'm not an economist, so it's just instinctual when I heard of this. And that is the gender pay gap in Canada is about to get bigger. Because men will earn more than women. And now we have so many more men. I feel like that gender pay gap it could get bigger. That's just the first thing that came to mind as one of the potential outcomes or consequences of such a disparity in gender. Ours, of course, for the reason you pointed out, is because of immigration, and typically men will come first. The other thing with immigration, though,
Serge, is Canada's always had this policy to keep families united. Yeah. And so what may happen is that men are coming first and then their families will follow. It'll be interesting to see 5 years out if this is still the case. It could be just initially, because a lot of the jobs, when, as we know, the Canadian government identified trades. And true enough, trades, especially if we're bringing them in from other countries, will be done by men. And so I think their families may join. It may not be the Lonely Hearts Club for men. And because at 25 to 44, that's also a really important age for population growth, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's a really good point. I didn't think of that. And trades are generally extremely well paid. So if we're bringing people to do trades, which I'm not convinced we are, but if we are, yes, obviously that's going to have an effect on the gender pay gap because it's mostly men. And like it or not like it, that's been the case. So it will have an effect. I don't think that's a negative effect, right? Like for us to bring in people that want to do these jobs, let's pay them what they should get paid. Yeah, if they have the skills, and if women want to do that job, yeah, they'll get paid the same amount. So absolutely. I guess it's something that we'll bookmark that right now, Shelley, and look back at 5 years if you're right that they brought in their family and that demographic to the shift. I'm not sure that's the case.
It'll even out. Yeah, I think so.
If you think it will, you must be right. Shelley, let's jump into the tip of the week.
You bet. Your tip of the week is brought to you by Plum. Plum knows that when people flourish, businesses thrive. Using science-backed insights, Plum aligns human potential with job needs, allowing you to build high-performing teams from a single platform. Ideal for improving hiring choices, identifying future leaders, and offering personalized career advice. Plum supports the entire employee journey, from hire to retire. Discover more at plum.io. So my tip of the week, Serge, I was really pleased with some feedback that I got from last week because I'm a bit of a geek about interviews and I've done a few of them over my career. And so I wanted to share another favorite interview question.
Okay.
And this one is trying to figure out from a candidate, where are they happiest in their work? And is there an interview question that will tell us that? Because if you're happy about the work you're doing, obviously, you'll perform best. So one of my favorite interview questions is, tell me when you could not wait to get to work. What were you working on? And I think the key to this is the simple question, but it is also knowing when to stop talking and let the candidate answer. And your role is to be curious. That's it. For me, a great interview is always when I do the least amount of talking. That's my tip of the week. Tell me when you were happiest at work and what were you working on?
I love it. And one of the things you mentioned earlier on is, do they have a smile on their face or whatever the case? I'd be curious to see how
many their eyes light up when they start talking about it. Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen that before. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, let's jump into the recruiting insights brought to you by our friends at Metova. Shelley, are you tired of the same old outsourcing woes?
Well, say hello to nearshoring. It's like outsourcing, but closer, and it won't make you pull your hair out.
Picture this. Top-notch IT talent from Latin America.
Many Latin American IT professionals have strong English language skills and even live in the same time zone, so no more midnight conference calls. Hallelujah. Plus, Latin America's growing tech ecosystem, strong educational institutions, and a pool of skilled IT professionals make it the perfect region for recruiting talent.
I have the perfect company that does this. The company's name is Metova. They have local experts who handle everything from recruiting to HR support.
So why settle for the same old outsourcing blues when you can have the nearshoring party with Metova?
Look them up at metova.com and let's get the fiesta started. Shelley, what do we have first on the docket?
So, super interesting. You know, HR, talent acquisition, we've always got to coin a new phrase. It's like almost every 3 or 4 months. So now the latest thing is we're calling it the great talent grab. And it's where...
Doesn't mean that you grab the talent, right? You just...
Don't be using your hands.
Okay.
No.
Too
no.
bad.
This is keep your hands to yourself, kids.
Oh.
So what's interesting is this is data released by ZipRecruiter that showed something super cool. And that is more people recently switched jobs because they were approached by a recruiter instead of applying themselves for the job. And so this ZipRecruiter survey indicates a growing trend of employees being recruited by other companies, with 46% of new hires in the first quarter of 2024 stating that they were recruited. That is up from 34% in the fourth quarter of 2023. Tell me, what does that indicate to you, Serge?
Well, I am surprised by how high this number is, but I'm not really surprised overall, because people that are working in companies have always been more attractive than people that are looking for work. It's the analogy of dating, right? Like a girl is way more attractive if she has a boyfriend than she doesn't, and vice versa. It's probably actually, now that I'm saying that, it probably works more for men. If they have a partner, they're a little bit more attractive to their female counterparts. I think this is exactly the case. A lot of hiring managers, when they're talking to recruiters, are like, no, we don't want anyone desperate. We want someone that is working somewhere else, doing exactly the same job, and we know that they can do the job. Unfortunately, that's not fair, because there's a ton of people that get laid off that are really good at their job. It's just the circumstances of the company in that particular time, and they're not been given a fair shot. Because if you dig in deeper to this survey, the job hunting process is taking a lot longer than it did in the past. And I think we're seeing that across the board. Like every news article that I read about job seekers saying how long it's taken them to be in the job market before they get even a bite, compared to you're working, a recruiter approaches you, it's a higher salary. Of course, you're going to talk to them. You're going to look at these opportunities. So I guess the message here is, if you're unemployed, you just have to keep at it, right? Like, unfortunately, it's the circumstances you're in. You still do the work, you make your contacts, you apply for the jobs, you try to build as many relationships as you can, especially with recruiters. If you are in a job, this is where it's highly critical for you to have your LinkedIn profile at its highest level that you can, and have the most amount of information and really telling your story on LinkedIn. And I guess that same advice would go for job seekers who don't have a job. If your profile is not optimized for recruiters to find you, and there's thousands of articles out there on how you can do that, you're shit out of luck, right? Because people are looking for you, and that's where most of the hires are coming from right now. So I guess what we could take away from this is, make sure you're out there, your profile is optimized on LinkedIn and anywhere else.
Can I add one more thing? It just occurred to me.
Yeah.
And having worked inside the ZipRecruiter system and pretty much all the systems, right? I wonder, certainly there's a trend, but one of the cool things, and of course, Indeed just enhanced their resume product, but one of the things about ZipRecruiter as well is, when you're setting up your job posting, it will reach out to candidates that are a match, but it looks like that reach out was coming from the person who posted the job. I think what this is indicating is certainly that the Zip matching tool is working really well, because these are people who got hired, right? And that is from 34 to 46% in one quarter. So I speculate that perhaps their matching technology is getting really good, because it does it for you. Right? It reaches out to candidates, which is the whole premise of the ZipRecruiter product, is that it finds candidates for you, is their tagline. And it does. I don't know.
You might be right.
A guess on my part that they've been quiet about their technology, and we've been poking the bear a bit because they raised so much money in the public market and nobody was hearing much. You know what? These sort of results are maybe an indication that they have been working on what's under the hood.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Shelley. I didn't think about it in that context, because you're right. When you're getting a message from ZipRecruiter, it looks like it's coming from you or from the recruiter itself. Mm-hmm. So you might be right. I'm not as optimistic based on my past experience with the ZipRecruiter candidate outreach and the type of jobs I've been. And maybe ZipRecruiter is doing some things to get ahead of the game and actually match somewhat accurately, which none of them do.
Biggest complaint from everyone. Yeah, biggest complaint. Solve that and they may hit a home run.
Yes. Shelley, let me jump into the next recruiting insight. Okay, I don't know if you saw this. You know, I'm on TikTok a lot. And this made the news. It's talking about a lady that I interviewed. And I'm going to get her to tell the story. Let's play the video.
Okay. Sure.
Okay, TikTok, I need your opinion on something. So I interviewed for a job earlier this week. The interview went so well. Every question she had, I had a great answer for. I used to work in recruitment. I know how to interview. My background and experience line perfectly with what the role entails. I thought it went great, but then I get an email from the recruiter saying that I'm not going to be moving on to the next round. I was really bummed because I wanted the job, but I was also very confused. So I did something I never do, and I emailed her back and asked for feedback. And she said that while my background was exactly what they were looking for, my experience lined up with what they need for the position, and my own personal goals and values aligned with the company's, she was concerned that for my interview, I hadn't put in enough effort in my appearance, given the level of role I was interviewing for. And I was interviewing for a vice president position. And now my appearance, I had done a blowout for my hair. I had on a nice top, a blazer, some earrings, but I only had on chapstick. I didn't have any makeup because I don't really wear a lot of makeup, not to be quirky. I just don't. So my question is, does not wearing makeup for women to job interviews or to jobs make it seem like they aren't putting as much effort or care into their job?
So Shelley, let's answer her question first. So a question at the end is like, not putting as much makeup or any makeup, does it share a message that you're not putting your best foot forward for that job?
Unless you're applying to MAC Cosmetics or L'Oreal. I don't know. What I don't know is who is the company. And rightfully so. Like, this isn't about, I don't think it's been about the company or who she's applied for, because I don't think she's ever revealed that.
No, we know it's a VP of HR role, right?
We do.
You know that.
She has revealed that, but she hasn't revealed who the company was or what the industry was. What are your thoughts, Serge? I've got several thoughts, but I'll maybe let you go first this time.
Oh, I was hoping you'd go first because I'm just treading really lightly on this one.
Okay. But
okay, taking the filter off. Absolutely ridiculous. From what she described that she was wearing and how her hair, she definitely had a professional appearance. And looking at this TikTok video, she is not unattractive. Not that that matters, but she's not wearing makeup. And I'm not like, oof, like, did she crawl under a bridge? I just think,
not a troll.
But yeah, for me, especially for a VP role or anything, like, who cares about makeup? Obviously, I don't want them to come into the interview completely disheveled and a mustard stain on their t-shirt. But like, the way she described and how she is, it's embarrassing that this company and this recruiter would come back to her and say, we don't think you're professional enough. That's absolutely ridiculous. I think in this world where people wear way too much makeup, that's my personal opinion, my personal bias, like, do what you want and what you feel comfortable. Obviously, if you're going to show up with tattoos on your face and piercings everywhere in your face as well, you just have to take into account that some people might not like that and might hinder your chances of getting a job. But no one should ever be discriminated just being themselves. And when I'm saying being themselves, she looked professional. Why does she need makeup? So that was my first thought. I thought it was ridiculous to the point that someone brought that up, because I would never get that as a dude at all. No one would be like, you didn't trim your beard a certain way. No one would ever say that. So ridiculous. I think she definitely avoided a really bad place to work, in my opinion. That's my first guidance.
Okay. So I've been following this story for a couple weeks. Actually, I saw one of her first posts. And it was more like just a blog where, again, she doesn't reveal who the company is or the industry. But the first time I read it, Serge, I got more of a sense that the recruiter just said that you weren't a match or cultural fit or something along that line. And then she interpreted it to mean because she didn't wear makeup, because in her mind, she was qualified in every way. She felt the interview went well. So the only thing that she could possibly conclude was that it was because she has a more natural appearance, which first thing I thought of is the same thing you did. That's ridiculous. I think the recruiter, again, idiot. Why would you say that to someone? If you were just to say simply, we have other candidates that just really knocked it out of the park and we're really excited to move forward and I'm sorry, this is the hard part of my job. This is the hardest part of being a recruiter is having to tell people that unfortunately, yes, you put a lot of effort and energy into this. So I find it especially hard to comprehend that a recruiter would say this because it's a VP of HR role and it's a small world. Wherever she goes, she is going to land a VP of HR role somewhere else. Yeah. And guess what? She probably is going to have a recruiting team. Oh, and guess what? You're never, like, your chances of ever working. And she's been very professional not to disclose who the recruiter was either.
Yeah.
Because we don't know if the recruiter was through a staffing agency, executive search firm. I highly doubt it. Because an executive search firm would never make such a mistake. Like if it wasn't an in-house recruiter, because in what world do you have your in-house recruiters recruit your VP of HR? It requires an outside perspective and search generally. So I don't know what to make of this. It doesn't make sense to me. And here's the other thing, Serge. I saw this go from a blog post to now how many thousands of views and likes on TikTok, and she's almost made it her brand now, the girl with no makeup that didn't get the VP of HR job. It's now become her brand and part of her flag that she has planted. But the story's changed a bit over time. If you go back and look at some of her original posts. So I don't know. There's part of this story that's missing.
It is. But I did want to take this particular example to raise another question because like over the past 4 years, it's been a challenge when it comes to interviewing, especially right after the pandemic. We did all our interviews over Zoom. So we have really lax on how we dress up for interviews. Like the standards have gone down and for many reasons, great. But I'm wondering now that pretty much everyone is returning to the office across the world, you're seeing less people work from home and doing a lot more face-to-face interview. It seems to be the norm again. What are the standards now? Like for men, obviously depending on the role, but let's say a white collar type role, do I go in the full suit? Is it back to pre-pandemic levels?
I don't think so.
Or is it a little bit more laid back? What should be the expectations when it comes to interviews and our candidates?
You said it right at the top of this article, Serge. Neat, clean, your clothes fit, because it's about what comes out of your mouth, how you answer questions. And that's why I guess she's getting so much mileage out of this, is because it's shocking to think that from her perspective, she answered everything intelligently and she's fully qualified for this job and she didn't get it. It doesn't make sense. I don't think the standards have dropped to the point where we're criticizing people over makeup. Unless she was applying for RuPaul's assistant or the VP of HR for RuPaul's Drag Race. I don't know.
I think in the past it mattered. I definitely think it mattered. If we go back to the 80s, 70s, 60s, how women and men, like appearance is always a consideration.
Sure.
I think earlier, yeah, absolutely. Makeup would have been an issue. And I hate to say it.
An issue? No, I think too much makeup. Would be
well,
an
too
issue.
Much makeup is the other it's the
if
other
you
realm
walk
of it.
In looking like a drag queen.
I am going to say this, and it's a little bit maybe controversial. If you're going to an interview today, right, as a man or a woman, overdress. Just overdress. If you're wrong, but no one's going to look at you negatively if you went in your best possible attire, you might think it's not fair that people shouldn't judge you on how you dress or what you dress with. The reality, it happens. Dress up and go at a higher level than you think what the office is.
don't go out and rent a tuxedo like this.
No, no. If the office is, I don't know, jeans and t-shirts, go in with jeans and a button-up shirt and a blazer.
Yeah,
if you go in there, it's business casual, step it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Add that jacket if you're a guy. For women, I don't know, what should you wear at an interview, Shelley?
I think you should be dressed conservative.
Yes.
And clean.
Okay.
Right?
That's good advice.
Conservative meaning put the girls away. No, really, I find that probably more embarrassing, mostly for the hiring people, what men or women, if someone walks in and the girls are in your face. We're getting off topic. We better move on, Serge.
Because I love that. There's a hashtag in there somewhere. Girls in your face. We're going to start using that.
Listen, nobody wants to see it, especially in an interview. It's so embarrassing. I had one girl show up once, Serge, flawless.
Okay.
With a thin shirt.
Okay.
And they were moving when she was walking. And I tell you, honestly, everyone's looking at me like, I'm not looking. Everybody's looking up at the ceiling.
Was it nippy out there?
Oh, yes, it was. It was so embarrassing.
I have stories like that too, but I'll keep them.
Okay.
We got to move on. Yeah, let's move on. So Shelley, let's go into the last recruiting insight. Over the past, I would say, couple of months, we've talked a little bit about how it used to be, right? So when you came into the world of work, you start entry level, be really good, get trained, promoted into that role, and on it went. And for some people, they ended up to be the president or CEO of that company and worked that company their whole lifetime. Obviously, times have changed. And that's no longer the norm. And it partly changed really with the advent of the ATS and job boards, where the availability of talent out there, there's a lot more, right? There's more options because you can go post a job on Indeed, ZipRecruiter, any of the major job sites, and you get millions of eyeballs on that job compared to in the past, you would put an ad in the local newspaper and maybe 20 people applied. They went through the whole process, would drop off the resume. In this world, instead of training and really creating that learning and development opportunity internally for those people to grow in other roles and maybe take a little bit of risk on them, we decide that we need someone doing that role somewhere else and we automatically go hire externally to bring them internally. I know we've been talking about it's an employer market recently, but there's still a massive skills mismatch, right? And it's very challenging to go out there and find the right people. And I think what we're missing as part of this equation, and there was a really interesting article, and Josh Burson talks a lot about this, about internal mobility. This is the time for us to really look at what are we doing internally? I think we have to shift our mind frame in certain companies to go from talent acquisition to talent management. And it might not be our role as a recruiter, right, to recruit internally. But if you're looking at an organization, your VP of HR, your executive at a corporation, what are you doing internally to promote those people? There is tons of data that shows that these people will last longer in your organization. They already have the knowledge of the company, which is a huge training challenge. You already know they're a culture fit or culture add. How do we get them to that role? How do we give them the skills? Obviously, that's not for every role. If you're hiring an astronaut, you're not going to promote someone that works in as a janitor, right? Unless they get the training.
Yeah.
One of the things, and I was just trying to think in my past, like what has held back companies from going back to that tried and tested true method? And I think it's a little bit of the incentives that are internally. I'm going to give you an example of, say, a sales team. You have a great sales team. One of your top sales leaders is just killing it. They're amazing. And suddenly they see a role in marketing that's really what they want to do next. A lot of managers, and I'm going to say this, I've done this. I have been a talent hoarder, meaning that I can't lose that person because if I lose that person, I'm not going to hit my targets, which is going to mean a whole lot of financial benefits to me. So subconsciously, I am doing what I need to do to keep that person within their role, which is just not fair. So how do we avoid talent hoarding? How do we get into a position that we are looking at folks within the organization and how they can grow into those critical roles that we will need in the future? What's your overall take here? Like, your next great hire should be internal is the name of this article. And I think it makes a lot of sense.
So your example is a great one to look at, because if you as a manager were given maybe an incentive of some sort, would that not have changed?
Yeah.
Right? Like, you realize that this is for the greater good of the organization, and allowing your top performer, you could maybe have the opportunity to build a case and say, listen, I'm going to need an extension on my budget deliverables because this person is currently responsible for, let's just pull a number out of the air, 22% of sales.
Okay.
So losing this person and then getting another person up to speed, which you absolutely can do as a sales leader, because you also get to choose the talent that you bring onto your team. But it does mean there has to be some sort of acknowledgement, because I built my goals and my commitments to the organization based on the capabilities of the team that I have. So if you kick out the legs from under me, of course you have to, because it impacts other people on your team. It impacts your workflow. So it's some sort of, I think, transition plan would be one thing. And the other thing is an incentive.
Yeah.
That as a hiring manager, there's some acknowledgement. I've had the same experience having worked in HR where internal mobility was on the plate of the talent acquisition team. And it was about 50% of our job was internal movement, unionized and non-unionized. What was happening though in the non-unionized, there were some managers who employees wanted to put their hat in the ring for a role, say in marketing or another department where they could be cross-trained, but they wouldn't do it because they had to notify their manager. And if they didn't get the job, their life just became hell. And they knew it would be the beginning of the end. So I believe that recruiters and talent acquisition, we can absolutely contribute to that internal mobility. I don't think we're the problem though. I really don't. I think there needs to be internal changes for hiring managers.
I completely agree with everything you said there. I think the incentives are just misaligned. If someone's on your team is so good and they could be the right fit and they get promoted into whatever role, that should be a boon to the manager that guided and helped this person get to the next level and helped them grow in the company. So 100% agree. And what's interesting about this is during the pandemic, internal hire numbers went up dramatically because it was definitely an employee market. So we're trying to figure out how do we get the talent. But the minute that shifted back to an employer market, internal hires have gone way down. So something for us to think about when we're looking at our whole landscape, talent landscape, how do we get more people internally promoted and hiring in the right role? Shelley, on that note, have a fantastic weekend.
Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your vacation, because I know there's a day or two left, and I appreciate you coming in recording while you're on your staycation.
Thank you, Serge. You have a great weekend as well. Au revoir.
Shelley, let's face it. Texting candidates is the easiest way to hire quicker today. But your cell phone doesn't connect to your ATS. You're sharing your personal number with strangers. That's pretty scary, right, Shelley? And it's not even legally compliant.
This is where our friends at RecText come in. They've created simple yet powerful text recruiting software that works with your ATS. Plus, it's designed by recruiters for recruiters, so you know it works. To learn more and book a demo, visit www.rectxt.com, mention the Recruitment Flex, and get 10% off annual plans.